Hello and welcome to our podcast, Informed
and Empowered.
My name is Khawla.
And I'm Grace.
And today we'll be discussing college responses to protests.
Specifically dealing with the question, when colleges interfere with peaceful student-led protests, do they violate our First Amendment right to freedom of speech and assembly? So, I mean, I don't even know where we start with this one because it's been such an ongoing issue with our generation and especially with colleges all around this last graduation season.
It has been on everybody's frontal minds. We've seen it throughout so many, like you said, a lot of, especially with people graduating and not being able to graduate because of their involvement with protests. So yeah. That leads you to question, like, how far can a college take it?
Yeah.
And how many rights can they violate? Or are they even violating my rights to protest and take away my ability to graduate or even go on with my career?
Yeah, it's a really pressing issue, a very big question. So that's why it was very interesting to dive into doing this research. It was a very exciting topic for me since we are students currently. And so with whoever listens, hopefully this gets into the ears of other students that can kind of be informed, like we said in our title. Just to get informed and know exactly what we can and can't do on our campuses. So yeah, I guess we should get it. This ad read is sponsored by the staff and students who sued UCLA for the encroachment of rights when reacting to the pro-Palestine protests in spring 2024. The specific case that they are involved with is Blair v. Regents of the University of California. They wanted to pass along the message that it is important to sue when you feel rights have been violated, because you never know. You can win and hopefully feel a sense of justice, or you can lose and appeal and make it out to the Supreme Court. So all around the U.S. right now, students are coming to the rash realization that there is a regulation on time, manner, and place when it comes to protest that we see all around schools in the U.S.
So for some context about time, manner, and place, it was first established as constitutional in the 1941 case of Cox versus New Hampshire, where the court held the ability to impose regulations that create order and safety for its populace does not infringe on the civil liberties of its people.
In a later court case, Ward v. Rock Against Racism in 1989, they got a little bit more specific in figuring out exactly the constitutionality of it with a three-part test that would judge if it's content neutral, if it's narrowly tailored to serve a substantial government interest, and if they do not unreasonably limit alternative avenues for expression. This is important because if students feel that they don't have a different avenue for expression, the schools can be in trouble.
And it is ridiculous to consider that time, place, manner violations are considered misdemeanors with a punishment equal to jail time or a fine. And precedent has been built through cases such as Smith v. Tarrant, where it made overly broad speech policies unconstitutionally. Also,
after New Year's Day, the planned end of the protests. Through their parents, the students ended up suing the school district for violating the students' rights of expression and sought an injunction to prevent the school district from disciplining the students. The district court dismissed the case and held that the school district actions were reasonable to upholding school discipline. However, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit affirmed the decision without opinion. That's how it got up to the Supreme Court. These appeals would lead it all the way up to the highest law of the land, and the result being the case Tinker v. Des Moines. The court held that, yes, the prohibition against wearing of armbands in public school as a form of symbolic protest did violate the students' freedom of speech. This case is very important because it establishes that schools must name the actual form of protest as a substantial disruption and infringement on the right of others in order to suppress it. In addition, it also said that the armbands represented pure speech that is entirely separate from the actions or conduct of those participating in it. It established both a kind of precedent for peer speech, and also how schools can and when restrict student speech. This case is still used as a landmark and as a very important puzzle piece to the actual creation and establishment of time, manner, place.
Now let's take a break for our sponsor.
With a quick break from our sponsors at ACLU to teach you some of your rights when protesting. When attending a protest, your rights are strongest in what are known as traditional public forums, such as streets, sidewalks, and parks. You also likely have the right to speak out on other public property, like plazas in front of government buildings, as long as you are not blocking access to the government buildings or interfering with other purposes the property was designed for. Private property owners can set rules for speech on their property. The government may not restrict your speech if it is taking place on your own property or with the consent of the property owners. Counter-protesters also have the free speech rights. Police must treat protesters and counter-protesters equally. Police are permitted to keep antagonist groups separated, but should allow them to be within sight and sound of one another. When you are lawfully present in a public place, you have the right to photograph anything in plain view, including federal buildings and the police. On private property, the owner may set rules related to photograph or video. You do not need a permit to march in the streets or on sidewalks, as long as the marchers don't obstruct car or pedestrian traffic. If you don't have a permit, police officers can ask you to move to the side of a street or sidewalk to let others pass or for safety reasons. What to do if you believe your rights have been violated? When you can write down everything you remember, including the officer's badge and patrol car numbers and the agency they work for. Get contact information of witnesses. Take photographs of any injuries. Once you have all this information, you can file a written complaint with agency's Internal Affairs Division or Civil Complaints Board. What happens if the police issues an order to dispose a protest? Shutting down a protest through a dispersal order must be law enforcement's last resort. Police may not break up gatherings unless there is a clear and present danger of riot, disorder, interference with traffic, or other immediate threat to public safety. If officers issue a dispersal order, they must provide a reasonable opportunity to comply, including sufficient time and a clear, unobstructed exit path. Individuals must receive clear and detailed notice of a dispersal order, including how much time they have to disperse, the consequences of failing to disperse, and what clear exit route they can follow before they may be arrested or charged with any crime. I was stopped by the police while protesting. What are your rights when this occurs? You stay calm, make sure you keep your hands visible, don't argue, resist, or obstruct the police, even if you believe they are violating your rights. Point out that you are not disrupting anyone else's activity and that the First Amendment protects your actions. Ask if you are free to leave. If the officer says yes, calmly walk away. If you are under arrest, you have a right to ask why. Otherwise, you wish to remain silent and ask for a lawyer immediately. Don't say anything or sign anything without a lawyer. You have the right to make local phone call. And if you're calling your lawyer, police are not allowed to listen. You never have to consent to a search of yourself or your belongings. If you do explicitly consent, it can affect you later in the court. Police may pat down your clothing if they suspect you have a weapon and may search you after an arrest. Police officers may not confiscate or demand to view your photographs or video without a warrant. Nor may they delete data under any circumstances. However, they may order citizens to cease activities that are truly interfering with legitimate law enforcement's operations. Now remember to always stay informed of your rights, and to learn more, visit the website ACLU Know Your Rights. Now back to the podcast.
Is at UCLA, where one of my friends has experienced these encampments and these protests firsthand.
Yeah.
She went on to talk about how during her time at UCLA, during the encampments, there was a lot of violence going on, a lot of people showcasing what they truly believe. Yet there was a lot of attacks on the encampments or the people who are involved in the encampments, because many people disagreed with them and they thought that what they were doing was wrong. She said that a lot of the time, especially at night, it was like a war zone. Police would come in and brutally remove a lot of the encampers off of campus. And yet the people who are protesting opposing these ideas of the encampments were let go. They were doing what they wanted. They attacked the encampers, and yet we didn't see the same thing. Exactly. We didn't see them get arrested. We didn't see them get harmed. Yet the people protesting on the other side were the ones getting harmed. Now, how is that right? How do we see
that? Right. And then also, I think that in our research, we found out that how many students was it that got arrested on that side, on the protesting side? Like,
in 1 week? Exactly. In 1 week, there was 200 students and faculty were arrested during this time, which is honestly
ridiculous.
Yet we don't see any arrests from the other side. Now, that's when hypocrisy comes. Like, if you're going to hold the same laws for one side, you have to hold them for the other side.
Yeah, that's where that content neutral becomes very important. I think that example, especially the UCLA example, is a very eye-opening one for a lot of students. I'm sure the majority of us listening, and I know we have seen the video of the UCLA encampment being just destroyed, fireworks, everything, smoke bombs. I think it just holds kind of close and dear to our heart as well, because it was in California. It was close. It is possible to happen to us if it gets that far.
And it's crazy to see that it wasn't only in California these encampments were taking place. They were all over the states.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Florida. We've seen Michigan. We've seen so many different colleges involving themselves in these encampments and the different reactions from campuses. But at the same time, they weren't really different.
Mm-hmm.
They were all pretty much silencing the voices that are speaking the loudest. And where does in our Constitution allows us not to be able to speak our minds or protest against things we don't believe in?
Yeah, it kind of sucks that we don't really see that success story from the protesters. We didn't really see any movement from the campuses. We didn't really see any movement from our government. We didn't really get a success story with this one, which makes it such a jarring issue.
The closest story that we did, although received, to a success story was at UCR, where the faculty did agree to some of their demands, and so they were the first encampment to be peacefully let go and ended.
That's good.
Yeah, we didn't see these at the top schools, and we didn't really see these in our own campuses.
Yeah, and the news isn't going to hit those ones, so that's actually very refreshing to hear. I didn't know about that one, so that's good that there is, like, a little bit of the success story in there. It happens, it's just less likely, and it's obviously less media, put in the media. But yeah, on our own campus, we have a friend, Madwa. She is a YDSA leader, one of the school or the clubs here on campus. And one of the times she was speaking to us about having a peaceful protest that was questioning the motives of a recruiter for Lockheed Martin. They were kind of informing them, hey, you know, he is giving bombs, he is giving weapons to Israel, and this is causing harm to children. And it doesn't matter the different relations between Palestine and Israel, children are dying, and he has a hand in that. And so when protesters were going to just peacefully question this recruiter, they were kicked out, and they were shut down. And specifically, she was stating that students who had Arab names or even looked Arab were caught in the crossfire and were punished for, quote, interrupting an event. She said that each of them got a mark on their record up to 5 years after graduation. I mean, think, Khala, like, how do you think you would feel if you got a mark up to 5 years? You want to go to law school. How do you think that would affect your chances? Like, what do you think as a personal kind of anecdote?
I mean, it'd be terrifying understanding that me defending what I believe or stating even simply my opinion and informing others of information that I have that might assist them would lead me into not being able to go on further into my careers or achieve the success story that I wish to achieve. And it's like, it's scary. It prevents students from speaking out. It makes them more terrified of the results of, okay, but if I speak this, what would happen? If I raise my opinion, will I lose my future? Will I do this or that? And that shouldn't be in any context. I mean, yeah. could you believe that it might affect your ongoing career after college for something that you stood for?
No, that would be so rough. And I mean, it also just affects the student's choice. I mean, graduating from Cal Poly Pomona, it's a great school. I do like this school. However, for a lot of students, it's not their last school. For a lot of students, they're transferring onto different programs, doctorate programs, master's programs that they might not have the ability to do here. And so the fact that it limits these students' choices for participating in a peaceful protest is very terrifying, yes. And I think, I don't know, it really does go back to, once again, that content neutral. She had also stated that a white student who had no Arab-sounding name or anything that was more vocal than them, more rowdy, kind of yelling, did not get in trouble.
And it showcases even a bigger problem that we have.
Yeah,
100%. Of targeting students that are, I guess, more affected by it. But, I mean, we're all human. We're all affected by what goes on in the world. Take away what the protests are about, just the fact that we're standing. I mean, we've seen it through history how protests can be so strong, especially student-led protests, because we are on the front lines. Mm-hmm. We are the ones who are pushing the ideas for our new generations. So for them to create more policies and more demands and more restrictions on us takes away all of our power. It takes away a lot of our push.
Yeah. And thinking about the court, I mean, do you think that what they've done in the UCLA case and also in our own school case, do you think that the judges would find that that was narrowly tailored and that had a significant government interest enough to restrict these rights? Do you think that it would go through or no?
I mean, sad to say, but I don't feel as though they would stand with the people. Mm-hmm. I feel like they would stand with the schools because it's so subjective with these laws and policies. Yeah. They can pick and choose what protests they support, and they can be like, yeah, of course we stand with the students. But if, let's say, the judge doesn't like what he's hearing and doesn't like the opposing team, you think he's going to actually stand with the students and say that, yeah, your rights were being violated? I mean, we see it all the time in court cases where it is a lot of bias and it is a lot of subjectiveness. Like, whatever you see, whatever you believe is what the decision they're going to make.
Yeah, for sure. And I worry if a case were to make it to the Supreme Court like this in the recent protests, if the judges would use it as an example, whether that be positively or negatively for the mm-hmm. students, if they would use that example, yes, you know, the First Amendment right, as Tinker, I believe, that case, you know, your rights don't get thrown out the second you walk into the college campus. It's kind of ridiculous that so many people in high school were able to kind of be protected in that way. But in a college campus that we pay for, that we pay to be at, we're seen as a disruption if we're kind of having our rights to speak.
Exactly, because we've seen these encampments and these protests even occur in high schools, yet we didn't see the same issues that we saw on college campuses. I mean, what makes it a different the second we hit 18, like they take away our rights or we're put to a different standard? When did that begin, that you, the second you enter college, you're different, you have to fall under different things?
Yeah, it's very jarring. I think it is a huge issue, like we've said. But I think ultimately the conclusion that I've come to, I think that despite there being possible different political motives behind the judges, I think that ultimately I'm not sure how many schools would actually pass this three-prong test. I'm not sure how many, at least in our analysis or in my analysis, have actually been able to prove that they have had enough reason to silence these students. But I do wonder, I think that's something that we'll have to see. There's nothing that we can't predict what the judges do. And it's not anything we can predict. It's just something that we can hope for, that they do have the students in the best interest. But I do think that you bring up a good point that they might not.
Exactly, and that's what we're for. But that's why we do this. That's why we're speaking out about it, so more students are able to see what their rights are, where are we possessed. Start thinking about these things, because these things truly affect us and affect our futures.
Yeah, and I think we both urge every student out there listening to just really do the research on your school and your policy. As much as we would like to know all the different policies at all the different schools, we can't. As far as time, place, manner goes, we've kind of laid out what exactly it takes for that to be constitutional, but looking specifically at your cases, maybe even if you think there's an injustice at your school, we urge you to sue. You know what? Get a group together and maybe you can make it up to the Supreme Court.
Exactly. I mean, for an example, a student at UChicago, it was his dream school and he worked so hard to get into that school. And he was actually representative for that school for a while. Yet the second he hit protests happened, the second he was involved, he wasn't able to graduate. All of a sudden, he was taken out. And he was the one going out encouraging students to apply to UChicago. Yes. And it's like a slap in the face. So what schools do you want to represent? What schools do you want to stand with? What schools do you want to truly say that, okay, they believe in human rights, they believe in my rights, and they protect my rights instead of going against my rights?
Yeah, 100%. That's a great point. When you're choosing schools out there, be mindful. Mm-hmm. Be mindful of that fact, you know? What are their policies? Are they unfair with the students? Do they just call the police the second that they get a whiff of dissent or protest? Or are they going to stand for the students' rights and let them have a voice?
Exactly. We want you all to sit there and think and truly see your positions and where you want to go with this, because the more informed you are, the more powerful you are. Mm-hmm. And always remember to be informed
and empowered
with Khawla
and Grace.
Thank you so much for listening.